This may be the single most chilling message you will ever hear.
Even more chilling than Matt's Christmas message that you heard here.
I want to teach you about my Jesus. I want to try to convince you that Jesus is real.
A monstrous Antichrist is coming. His power and stature are infinitely beyond anything you have been told. This will be no Hollywood actor in a hooded robe with fangs, a popular image of him, but rather a titanic figure of awesome worldwide power and authority that not one person you know is remotely prepared for.
That's right. Matt wanted to tell you about his Jesus and convince you that he's real. And today, I want to tell you about my Antichrist, and I want to convince you that he's real. This week on Infants on Thrones.
This is Infants on Thrones. The philosophies of men mingled with humor. We are the Quorum.
Welcome back to Infants on Thrones. I'm Glenn Ostlund. And first, essay contest. So I've got two, maybe three people that have submitted essays, and we really need to have like 10 to have a contest. So I'm not quite sure what to do. If you want to submit an essay, please record it and submit it, and we'll do it. We'll do the essay contest. I'm just going to wait for a critical mass of listener essays before we actually start, before I start publishing them. So please do it. Send it in. Remember, there's cash prizes for first place, second place, and third place. Check out our website and follow the instructions and send us some listener essays. Love to hear what's interesting to you. Now, here today is what's interesting to me. And the Antichrist. The Antichrist. Everybody's scared of the Antichrist. Everybody's always been scared of the Antichrist. But you know, it's kind of funny because there's not really a tradition or a strong tradition of Antichrist in Mormonism like there is in other Christian sects. So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to open up my old Bruce R. McConkie Mormon doctrine book here and look to see what he said about Antichrist. And there's not even like Antichrist singular, it's Antichrists plural. And it says see apostasy, Christ, Church of the Devil, Devil, False Christ, Man of Sin. Yeah. So here's what he says. He says, an Antichrist is an opponent of Christ. He is one who is in opposition to the true gospel, the true church, and the true plan of salvation. And then he cites some scriptures in John. He is one who offers salvation to men on some other terms than those laid down by Christ. Sherem, Nehor, and Korihor, Book of Mormon characters, were all antichrists who spread their delusions among the Nephites. Many deceivers are entered into the world. I'm going to skip ahead. The saints in the meridian of time, knowing that there would be a great apostasy between their day and the second coming of our Lord, did they really know that? I mean, did people really know that there was going to be a great apostasy before the Mormon church came? I don't think so. They referred to the great apostate church as the Antichrist. Oh, great. So now we're taking Antichrist and we're using it to besmirch the Catholics. That's cool. That's cool, Bruce. Blah, blah, blah. I'm going to skip ahead because right now he's just saying that the Catholic Church is the Antichrist. The spirit of the Antichrist. Blah, blah, blah. This great Antichrist, which is to stand as the antagonist of Christ in the last days, and which is to be overthrown when he comes to cleanse the earth and usher in the millennial righteousness, is the church of the devil. Okay, so basically the tradition of Antichrist from Christianity, at least Bruce R. McConkie's version of Mormonism, he turned the Antichrist into the Catholic Church. I'm not going to say that the Antichrist is the Catholic Church. That's not my point in today's minisode.
John Amos says now.
My point is, maybe it's not really a point, as much of a question. Is it possible that maybe an Antichrist could be somebody who embodies the teachings of Christ, like the good teachings of Christ, the things that Christ taught that we could all agree, you know, like be nice to each other, love each other, take care of the poor, those kinds of messages. Is it possible that someone could attain that type of enlightened Christ-like state through a different path than the way that Jesus of the Bible did? So instead of being a perfect man who never committed any sin except when he got mad at those people in the temple, that it was actually a man of sin who took a very different path. He did all the sins. He tried all the sins, but still arrived at this point of enlightenment, recognizing we need to help the poor. We need to love each other. We need to overthrow the pharisaical systems that are imprisoning us. What if that was an antichrist? Just using the symbol of an antichrist. Would you be interested in someone like that? Learning from someone like that? Listening to someone like that? Following someone like that? I would. And I think I found them. I think I know who it is. I think I know who the antichrist is. And I'm super excited to share this with you today.
All right. He is an actor, comedian, and best-selling author of Recovery, Freedom from Our Addictions. Russell Brand is over here.
So this last October 2017, I'm watching Real Time with Bill Maher, and this Russell Brand guy comes on. And I knew who Russell Brand was, kind of. I remembered him from Forgetting Sarah Marshall and some other MTV things that I'd seen him on. And you know, back in the day when he was big, I couldn't stand him. I didn't really know him that well. I didn't pay that much of attention to him because he was so repulsive to me. I thought, what? Why does this guy think he's so funny? He's not funny. He's just obnoxious. I just found him obnoxious and totally distasteful. Russell Brand, coming on to Bill Maher. Okay, well, I'm sitting here. I know it's going to be a short segment. I'll just watch it.
And I must say, I feel like there was a time when I saw you a lot.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Maybe too much. And lately...
You didn't have to hover by my window.
Okay, that was a good response. That was quick. That was witty. It was self-aware, self-deprecating a little bit, accepting and owning kind of the image that... Okay, all right. I like that. I'll give you points for that, Russell. Good job. Good on you.
And lately, I don't see you enough. How can I get the right amount of Russell Brand in my diet?
This is the classic addiction dilemma. Once we have a little bit and then we get carried away and we can't control it. Our inability to moderate. Well, what happened was, I think, is I became immersed and engulfed in the intoxicating drug of celebrity. Drank and drank from the cup like Icarus, flew too close to the sun, right. Burned myself terribly, and then retreated to the British countryside to look at wildfowl.
Okay, I really like that response too. I mean, again, very self-aware, self-deprecating, honest. He took a great opportunity to launch into his book about addiction, taking what Bill asked. I mean, okay, all right, I think I'm getting this guy. I think I'm feeling this guy. Keep watching.
As you're an addiction specialist, would you concur with that fame is as bad as the other ones?
I'm a specialist in that I've experimented on myself quite ruthlessly and quite extensively. Not in laboratory conditions, more's the pity. I could have done with someone in a lab coat to give me a cuddle, and a Petri dish would have been useful. But... What I do agree with, Bill, is these are times where we live on the outside. External phenomena have stimulated us to a ludicrous degree, and that addiction is just the amplification of consumerism. If you constantly broadcast at people that they ought be afraid, if you constantly broadcast at people that they ain't good enough and that they can purchase somehow externally the feeling of well-being, then addiction for me is a natural conclusion of this phenomena.
Whoa. Okay, hang on. What did he just say? So I appreciate the bit about ruthlessly experimenting on himself, but not in laboratory conditions. That was funny. A Petri dish could have been useful. What does that mean? That's funny. But then what was that next part? External phenomenon has stimulated us to a ludicrous degree. And addiction is just the amplification of consumerism? If you constantly broadcast at people that they ought to be afraid, if you constantly broadcast at people that they ain't good enough and that they can purchase somehow externally the feeling of well-being, then addiction, for me, is a natural conclusion of this phenomenon. Did he just say that off the cuff?
The external phenomena has stimulated us to a ludicrous degree, and that addiction is just the amplification of consumerism. If you constantly broadcast at people that they ought be afraid, if you constantly broadcast at people that they ain't good enough and that they can purchase somehow externally the feeling of well-being, then addiction for me is a natural conclusion of this phenomenon.
Did that just come? Did he memorize that and repeat it like a line from a play, or is this just him off the cuff? That was amazing. Holy cow. That was life-changing to me when I heard that. That makes so much sense. Within a minute, however long it took, I became a huge Russell Brand fan. I want to find out more about this guy. Who is this guy? What is this guy about? I like what I'm hearing. And I don't, but I do.
I ain't gonna fuck with that.
I wrote a book about it.
Yeah, I was gonna say you did write a book about it, and you've had all the addictions, and you've done all the drugs.
Oh, man.
And what was your favorite?
It's exhausting. Well, I'll talk you through. Heroin is very, very relaxing. Too relaxing. You let go of your life in the end. LSD is delightful to annihilate the concept of self, the construction of self, the biochemical tapestry stimulated by a culture, formulated in memory. To see that thing bust apart by hallucinogens is a glory to behold, to experience oneness, to experience connection, to know that, in truth, we are all one. The glory of the light, the glory of the Lord. I know you're an atheist.
Yeah,
don't recoil, Bill. These chairs have got wheels on them for a reason. I liked LSD.
I'm glad you're...
I'll tell you the second drug.
I'm glad you're now so sane and healthy. Go on.
I'm only describing one evening.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm sitting there watching this thinking, wow, this guy is funny. He's witty. He's quick. He's smart. He's profound. The things that he's saying, they're totally ringing true to me. How did he describe what we are as people? Biochemical tapestry. That we are a biochemical tapestry stimulated by our culture, formulated in our memories. And then seeing that thing that we think of as us bust apart, that's a glory to behold, to experience oneness, to experience connection, to know that in truth we are all one?
For me, the only drug that I'm interested in is the drug that we are pursuing in the first place, the drug of connection, of unity, of love. For me, all these things are placebos, every drug, every commodity, just a placeholder on the way, false idols, as we seek out some kind of truth and connection in whatever denomination, in whatever language, whether it's agnostically, atheistically, or religiously. We're all looking for oneness. We're all looking for connection. And I think in your country at this time, we're seeing tumult and rage bubbling up in the form of these peculiar figures, these ludicrous gargoyles that govern, these comedic figures that even your parody cannot entirely do justice to. Who are these people?
Unity, love, connection. This is Zion. This is the idea, the concept of Zion. It's what I was brought up thinking was the main purpose of everything in my Mormon religion. There's still probably pieces of that there that this was connecting with that was making me feel, oh yes, wholeness, validation to a previous native worldview that I had. Anyway, I just immediately started liking what I was hearing from Russell Brand.
Can I ask you about one more addiction? You yes, said sir. You were also a sex addict. Isn't there a difference? Is a difference between all the drugs which you are physically addicted to and which have harmful side effects. What is the bad side effect of sex addiction? Smiling too much?
Well, I did do a wry grin there, sir, because I'm juvenile and I'm on a television program. But sex addiction and food addiction, these are necessary aspects of a healthy human life. But I would say the definition of addiction is a behavior that you repeat that is having detrimental effects and that you cannot stop. stop. For me, that is the definition of addiction. Now, initially, if you are happy to be...
But if it doesn't hurt you, why is that?
Well, it ultimately does hurt me, and it ultimately hurt other people. As a white heterosexual who's attracted to adult human females, you hit a bottom more slowly than if you had more peculiar...
I bet you hit a bottom a lot when you're a sex addict. All right, one more...
I'm just saying that ultimately sex addiction leads to the objectification and commodification of women.
One more
thing.
And at this point in the interview, you could kind of hear it at the end where Bill Maher was trying to shut him up and move on to his next segment. But I was getting tired of hearing Bill Maher. I wanted to hear more from Russell Brand. So I went out and I got the audiobook, Recovery, and started listening to it. And it just blew me away again at how totally entertaining he is, how... self-deprecating, self-aware, but there's also this healthy self-respect that he has for himself and for all of the shit that he's gone through in his life and all of the different things that he's been addicted to. And I think that was the biggest eye-opener to me, is that when I've thought about addiction in the past, I've thought about alcohol, I've thought about drugs. I haven't really thought, you know, okay, sex. I know people talk about pornography as an addiction, but he's got such a broad definition of addiction, or at least he introduced me to this idea of a broad definition of addiction, that it's really anything that is this detrimental behavior that we keep doing and we can't stop. We can't stop on our own. We need help to do it. And it's really covering up this emptiness that we're feeling, this sense of that we're not good enough or that we're not worthy, which is one of the things I've always hated about the way that the Mormon Church is set up. There's such an emphasis on worthiness, and you're not worthy unless you hit these certain conditions that not everybody can meet. Anyway, so I started listening to the audiobook, and I'm going to play a clip from the audiobook, because basically what he's doing, he's explaining the 12-step program from Alcoholics Anonymous, but he's doing it in his own Russell Brand kind of way. He reinterprets it, and this is part of, you know, when I playfully look at him as being an antichrist, that would you think about Jesus saying fuck or talking about the things that Russell Brand's talking about? No, that's totally anti-Jesus. That's the opposite of what we expect from Jesus. But if you open up your mind, if you open up your ears to what he's saying and not how he's saying it, and having that trip against whatever puritanical values you've grown up with in your culture, you can hear that the message of oneness, of love, of unity, and starting with self-love, and filling that so that you don't have to be addicted to these things that are harmful to you and harmful to others, that's the best message in the world. That's the best message in the world. So anyway, here is a clip from his book, Recovery.
Are we addicts like the animals that evidently preemptively fled the oncoming tsunami, sensing some foreboding? Are we attuned to prickling signals that demand anesthesia? What is the pain? What is it? What does it want?
I'm going to come back to those questions at the end because I think they're important. And I think I kind of know where he's going with it.
Now, let's not forget in all the excitement that this is a self-help guide to tackling addiction in all its forms, a guide that will encompass certain principles that, if followed, will free you from the misery, however quiet or consuming, of your condition. An integral, unavoidable, and in fact one of the best parts of this process is developing a belief in a higher power. Not that you have to become some sort of religious nut. Well, actually, you already are a religious nut if you take religious nut to mean that you live your life adhering to a set of beliefs and principles and observances concerning conduct. Most people in the West belong to a popular cult of individualism and materialism where the pursuit of our trivial, petty desires is a daily ritual. If you're listening to this specifically because you have addiction issues, whether to substances or behaviors, you are in an advanced sect with highly particular devotional practices. Sometimes so ingrained they don't even have to be explicitly thought. They are intensely and unthinkingly believed. If I find Miss Wright, all will be well. If I can get my rocks off or yawn down a pint of ice cream, I'll be okay. What this program asks us to consider is the possibility of hope. Hope that a different perspective is possible. Hope that there is a different way. the 12 steps. You know me, right? You know I hate systems, especially the system, a bogus set of instructions for us, the people, to follow while the truly free wallow in privilege. So imagine my initial resistance to this system, the 12 steps. Don't tell me what to do. I'm an individual. I'm a maverick. I'm a hustler. I'm a poet wandering through the wind-lashed wilderness, screaming my song into the po-faced and judgmental world. Especially as in its original form, the 12 steps says the word God as freely and as frequently as an ecclesiastical Tourette sufferer. I sat in chilly rooms in the British countryside, all chastened and desperate, looking at these bleak edicts on the wall, thinking, maybe for you, but not for me. Curiously, later examination of these principles revealed that self-centered, egotistical thinking is the defining attribute of the addictive condition. Self-centeredness is a tricky thing. It encompasses more than just vanity. It's not just Fonzie looking at himself in self-satisfied wonder and flexing his little tush. No. Here is a more opaque example of self-centeredness. If your partner is a bit wayward, you know, selfish or difficult, and you cast yourself as the downtrodden carer pacing behind them going, I don't know what they'd do without me, that is another form of self-centeredness. You are making yourself and your feelings about the situation the ontological, steady, centre of the world. Is there a different way that you could be you? Especially as we all know, don't we, that you being you and me being me is the absolute alpha and omega of the world today. Flick on a TV, glance at your feed, it's all about me, 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 the perfect product, holiday, hair tonic, telephone provider for my unique self. Well, that's just fine and dandy, but I don't really know what me is or what me wants, and now I'm beginning to question if thinking about me all day is doing me any good. The first time I saw the steps, I thought, bit religious, bit pious, bit ambitious. There was the Christian-y feel. Look at the third step, turn our will and our lives over the care of God. Steady on, old boy, that just sounds like a cosy version of ISIS. But now I know, you could be a devout Muslim with a sugar problem, an atheist Jew who watches too much porn, a Hindu who can't stay faithful, or a humanist who shops more than they can afford to, and this program will effortlessly form around your flaws and attributes, placing you on the path you were always intended to walk, making you, quite simply, the best version of yourself it's possible to be. In my case, as you will see, this includes a good many flaws, some odd thoughts, and occasional behavioural outbursts. If this is your first encounter with the steps, note your own feelings towards them. 1. We admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and that our lives had become unmanageable. 2. We came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4. We made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5. We admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6. We were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7. We humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8. We made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. We made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. We continued to take personal inventory and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. We sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to addicts and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Here's how I look at the steps now, and I invite you to look at them the same way. It certainly demystifies them. I've probably overcompensated with the F word, but my point is that this is a practical system that anyone can use. 1. Are you a bit fucked? 2. Could you not be fucked? 3. Are you, on your own, going to unfuck yourself? 4. Write down all the things that are fucking you up or have ever fucked you up and don't lie or leave anything out. 5. Honestly tell someone trustworthy how fucked you are. 6. Well, that's revealed a lot of fucked up patterns. Do you want to stop it? Seriously? 7. Are you willing to live in a new way that's not all about you and your previous fucked up stuff? You have to. 8. Prepare to apologise to everyone about everything affected by your being so fucked up. 9. Now apologise. Unless that would make things worse. 10. Watch out for fucked up thinking and behaviour and be honest when it happens. 11. Stay connected to your new perspective. 12. Look at life less selfishly. Be nice to everyone. Help people if you can. What about my precious individuality, though? I can't subject my unique mind to a system. The philosophical prison ain't been built that can hold me, baby. That may well be, and resisting authority is all fine and dandy, but the point of that surely is to resist being oppressed or exploited by that authority. There is no oppression or exploitation here. Furthermore, and dim the lights and cue the Twilight Zone music, who is the me that I am trying to protect? That's a question that we'll ponder over these chapters and possibly answer. Although, I'll be honest, the riddle of understanding the true nature of self has baffled the finest minds humanity has had to offer since time began. Still, I like a challenge.
So there you go. This is the Antichrist. This is my Antichrist. This is the guy who's not gone the traditional religious route by any means. He's gone totally opposite. Everything that I was brought up to say don't do, he's done. And in doing that, he came to the place that I haven't come to, but always felt like I should. This place of personal enlightenment and freedom from the addictions of the world. It's just, it's amazing to me. And so until... Until Russell Brand becomes aware of this little teeny tiny podcast with dozens and dozens of listeners called Infants on Thrones and extends an invitation for Infants on Thrones to become part of his new podcast. He's got a podcast called Under the Skin, which I recommend. I've started listening to it. It's fantastic. I'm sure we'll be doing some episodes about things that he's covered from Under the Skin. But until he gives us an official invite to become part of the Under the Skin family of podcasts that eventually changes the world, which is one of his missions to change world consciousness. Until that happens, we're just going to be unofficial members of the Under the Skin podcast, or at least my contributions to Infants on Thrones. I can't speak for the other infants and for episodes that they make, but episodes that I make, I'm going to dedicate to the Antichrist, to Russell Brand, at this time in history where I think so many of us can feel this dread, this fear. What's going to happen? Is it global warming? Is it climate change that's going to become this huge disaster, this huge crisis? Is it something with North Korea, nuclear weapons? Is it war in the Middle East? Is it conflict with terrorism, with religious battles with Islam and Christianity? Whatever's happening, it just feels like these are the end of days. We're close to the end. There's that sense that's there, but it doesn't have to be. And maybe there is some kind of millennium, something or other that will happen, and it's not what the scriptures have said exactly, but it is a period of enlightenment where people do wake up to who we really are and the connection that we really do share. And, you know, these in-group squabbles and out-group squabbles and echo chambers and everything that we're seeing needs to break down. I think that's, you know, the segment where he's talking about what is our pain, what is it that we're feeling that we have to medicate ourselves and numb ourselves to. It's that painful awareness that we are separate. I think it goes back to the Emile Durkheim sacred and profane distinction that Matt and I talked about a couple of podcasts ago, the Mormon Cultural Membrane, where we reviewed Jonathan Haidt's TED Talk. We've lost something that's biologically a part of us, this need for connection, this need for, oneness and the Zion. It's Zion. So anyway, I found my Antichrist, Russell Brand, under the skin. And there's a documentary called Brand, A Second Coming, that we're going to do a review of in the next couple of weeks. So you haven't heard the end of Russell Brand on Infants on Thrones. And I just wanted to introduce that to you today. And I say these things in the name of the Antichrist. How blasphemous, blasphemous, blasphemy from Infants on Thrones. But what a great message. What a healthy message. Something that I really want to keep exploring. And I hope that you'll be interested in exploring this with us. And listener essays, please, please help provide context and content and new perspectives and share with us what you're learning, what you're experiencing. Let's have that be something that we do more of on Infants on Thrones like we used to do in the past. Let's get back to that. But it starts with you knowing what you want to say, writing it down, recording it. You don't have to add music. You don't have to add sound effects. Just share your perspective. And I'd love to get more of those. So please, listener essays on Infants on Thrones. And thank you again for listening. That's it for now. Isn't it a shame how we break each other's hearts?
Cause hey, Dr. Akloria in Welv in Norge. Did you know that infants on thrones in Norwegian are called spädbarn på troner? Du kan kommentera den episoden på nettsidan infantsonthrones.com. Och hvis du liker det du hører, gi forumet 5 stjerner og skriv en kort anmeldelse på iTunes. Det har jeg gjort. For all you non-Norwegian speakers out there, you can comment on this episode on infantsonthrones.com. And if you really like what you hear, give the quorum a 5-star rating in iTunes. Det noen som vil avslutte med bønn? Some things take so long.
Thank you for listening to
Infants on Thrones.
Infants on Thrones.